As a pioneering naval aviator, he flew off a precarious shipboard platform to shoot down a German Zeppelin. And as an inventive engineer, he created a clock on which the success of a Norfolk-based business was founded. Yet arguably his greatest and most enduring legacy is evidenced in the gargantuan shape of the 65,000-ton HMS Queen Elizabeth, Britain's most expensive aircraft carrier and the most advanced fighting ship in the world. For Smart, the intrepid and ingenious son of a hatmaker who grew up with a passion for all things mechanical was one of a small band of airmen who were instrumental in changing the face of modern warfare a century ago. Flying from the deck of a specially converted battle cruiser on a summer's day in 1918, he helped lead the first ever carrier-launched airstrike in history and in doing so forged a trail for others to follow. In a candid and graphic account of the sortie carried out on the morning of July the 19th, 1918, Smart bemoaned a mission beset by mechanical problems that was in danger of being scuppered by high winds well short of his objective, the Zeppelin base at Tonder near Germany's border with Denmark. At the head of the second of two ragged V formations of bomb-carrying biplanes struggling to keep pace with him, he fretted as they fell further and further behind the other flight. "The only thing to do was grin and bear it," he later wrote, "though my state of mind was somewhat lurid and the things I called the others were simply unprintable." As they flew on into thickening cloud, it had effectively become a case of Tondern or bust. Bravely determined though he was, Bernard Arthur Smart hardly conformed to the popular image of First World War aviators as dashing devil-may-care characters cast in the Biggles mould. His meticulous attention to detail was an immutable character trait that served him well as a pilot and then as managing director of the Durham-based firms Gentique and Metamec. "You might say he was pedantic," recalled his son, "but I would prefer to call him thorough." Confidential reports described him as a sound leader, reliable and steady, who was possessed of no little initiative. Such virtues were apparent in his rise from a petty officer mechanic in a motorised machine gun unit to newly qualified pilot with the rank of flight sub-lieutenant and made him an ideal candidate for a new shipboard aeronautical experiment. The idea was to fly a single-seater Sopwith Pup off a 16-foot platform fitted above a cruiser's gun turret in order to counter the menace posed by prowling German Zeppelins. Bernard Smart was the first to put the theory to the test for real, taking off from HMS Yarmouth on August the 21st, 1917, to engage and destroy the Zeppelin L-23 over the North Sea. His success, a little over a year after learning to fly, earned him a Distinguished Service Order and a transfer to HMS Furious, a converted battlecruiser which was then at the forefront of naval aviation development. He was in his element, constantly adapting and improving his aircraft in preparation for the test to come. By the summer of 1918, his ship Camel, a derivative of the famous Sopwith Camel, sported his own patented windscreen and a host of other bespoke gadgets, as well as a distinctive blue and white checkered nose. The only question was, to what end was it all for? Initial plans to employ Furious's aircraft as top cover during fleet sweeps had yielded little in the way of action. A bolder strategy was therefore adopted to strike at the enemy's airship bases, or, as Smart put it in a letter to his mother, in their own nests. He was among eight pilots originally selected for the raid on Tondern. In the weeks leading up to the sortie, Smart proved a relentless taskmaster in training for what he called the stunt. "I simply revelled in the practices and drilled my flight every opportunity until they could hang within a few yards of me in the air and no amount of ordinary manoeuvring would shake them off. We practised dives on every landmark in the place so that they were prepared to follow me down on anything at a moment's notice." That moment finally arrived after two weather-aborted efforts in the pre-dawn of July the 19th. By then, the eight had become seven, a figure that would be reduced to six less than an hour into the mission when one of Smart's flight was forced to drop out with engine trouble. To say the operation, one of the most portentous undertaken in nearly 4 years of unremitting conflict, was not going to plan was an understatement, but worse was to follow. Not only were the raiders being blown off course by stronger than predicted winds, they were swallowed in a disorientating bank of cloud. The two aircraft trailing behind Smart were soon lost to sight, and with the gaps in the cloud becoming fewer and smaller, it wasn't long before he lost his bearings entirely. Taking a chance, he dived beneath the smother and, to his great relief, spotted a small island, which he recognised as one marking the boundary between Denmark and Germany. Once over land, he followed the line of a railway to within what he thought was 2 or 3 miles of Tondern, but was actually nearer to 10, before turning to make his final approach. By the time Smart's flight closed the target, smoke was already gushing from two of the base's huge airship sheds as flames engulfed the Zeppelin's L-54 and L-60 following the first flight's attack. The defenders, having been initially taken by surprise, were now fully alerted as the second trio bore down. Boom, boom, woof, woof went the guns, and two black round puffs of smoke appeared in the sky on my left, wrote Smart. Then a number of other batteries opened out on us. Seeing smoke belching from the biggest of a cluster of sheds, he signalled to his following camels before diving through a wretched hail of anti-aircraft fire that properly put the wind up me to deliver an attack on the next largest. Down and down I came until over only 100 feet, at which height one could scarcely miss a shed of this size, and then I dropped the bombs in succession and swerved away. Beneath him the ground was absolutely thick with men running in all directions, and soon he could hear the unmistakable crackle of rifle and machine gun fire, sparking unwelcome memories of his days on the Gallipoli Peninsula. His last memory of Tondern was of men rushing about and waving, horses tearing round in mad fright, and cattle leaping in all directions. Very quickly he drew clear of the guns, and it was only then that he realised he was alone. Having become separated during the attack, the other two aircraft had gone their own way, and though he had circled for a while in the hope of meeting up again at their pre-arranged rendezvous, he saw nothing of them again. Crash landing near to the destroyer HMS Violent, his troubles were still far from over. The ship's crew was already engaged in rescuing another of the raiders, and Smart was forced to cling on to the tail of his aircraft as waves broke over him. By the time they were able to turn their attentions to him, he was barely conscious. "I was completely done," he wrote, "and I don't think I could have held on more than another minute or two." Smart was one of only two of the raiding force to make it back. Of the others, three landed in neutral Denmark, and one, flown by 19-year-old Toby Hewlett, came down in the sea and was lost. Incredibly, for such a high-risk mission, flown at the limits of the camel's endurance, he was the only fatality among the seven men who had departed Furious's flight deck on their history-making sortie just a few hours earlier. In return, they had accounted for two Zeppelins as well as a captive balloon, a feat recognised by a shower of awards that included a bar to Smart's DSO. More significantly, they had proved beyond any doubt the effectiveness of aircraft carriers as a weapon of war. Not that Bernard Smart ever gloried at his part in the achievement. Aside from attending a few reunions after the war, he rarely, if ever, spoke of any of his extraordinary exploits. Turning away from flying forever, he focused instead on making a success of his Norfolk businesses. His last word on Tondern was characteristically modest. Downplaying the raid's importance, he maintained that the fuss made about it was altogether out of proportion to the stunt. A century on, historians would beg to differ.